Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Today we're talking physical therapy, and we'll start with looking at how sitting all day can affect your health. And our physical therapists are back for all your movement and injury-related needs. Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, professor and the doctor of physical therapy program at UW-Madison. Jill, good to see you.
It's great to be here as always, Larry.
And Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Our other guest, of course. Lori, good to see you.
It is good to be here.
So as we talk with them, I hope you'll join in. Think about your day and tell us how long you sit or stand. How do you make sure you stay active? We'll take your general physical therapy questions as well. And the number to call is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Lori, let's start with you. You brought a study that looks at the effects of a sedentary lifestyle. What did they find out?
Oh, yeah. So let me start by saying that I sat for 14 hours yesterday driving to and from Green Bay and sitting for the Packer game. And it was a great game. Go Pack.
And you had beautiful weather.
And we had great weather. I mean, it was a great day to be at Lambeau, no doubt. But living down here, I spent hours sitting in the car to get there, got to a game, sat and watched the game, and then, you know, walked 200 yards back to the car and sat all the way back down here. And I thought of our paper that we were talking about today, because when I got up this morning, like, I was stiff, you know, and it's so that just shows you how with one bout of extended sitting is really bad for your health. So this study looked at the amount of time you sit in a single bout. So one of the things that they've looked at over time is like, how many hours a day do you sit? And they talk about total hours, but they didn't look at how long you sit at a time. And this paper broke down not just the total cumulative number of hours you sit, but how long you sit at a time. And they found that people who sat 60, 90 minutes at a time had an increase in, wait for it, all-cause mortality. All-cause mortality, okay, if you didn't hear it the first time. So it's not just the total amount of time you sit, but how long you sit at once. And the recommendation is to sit no more than 30 minutes.
Right. And so, interestingly, so I didn't get to go to the Packer game, but we had many guests at our house who did go to the Packer game, and they were in the same situation as Lori, a 14-hour day sitting. And when they came back, I said to one of the guys, I said, well, come on in and have a seat and let's chat. And he said, well, I'll visit with you, but I'm going to stand. He said, this was really hard on me. And he made a very interesting comment that post-COVID, he is now in a hybrid work situation. He goes into his office 2 days a week and his own home 3 days a week. But his office has gotten so condensed, they have so little space now because people aren't there, that he would much rather prefer to work at home because he has more space to get up and move around. His space at work is so compromised that even if he wants to get up and go for a walk, there's really nowhere to go. And so for him, he schedules his conference calls and things like that around times when he can walk the dog, which is a great idea. But I think this new post-COVID, we have to think about things like that. And the other thing Lori and I were talking about was, well, back in the day when we were kids, we watched television on the three major networks and they all had commercials. And everybody got up during the commercial and ran to the bathroom and ran and got more food and ran around. And now with all of these live these streaming services, you can watch a movie, you can watch two or three movies and never get up because there's no commercials.
And not only that, they get you by you're watching an episode of something and it doesn't stop and you have to restart. It goes right into the next episode. It will not let you change providers.
Exactly.
Well, I've heard the phrase that sitting is the new smoking.
Yes.
Yes.
Is that kind of true or...
It's the side effects of being sedentary, as this paper alludes to, have negative consequences on you, as Lori said, all systems, similar to smoking. So it is the new detrimental activity, if you will, and something that can easily be changed. And I think this paper said that really getting up every 30 minutes was key. Now, for driving home, that's impossible to do, mm-hmm. unless you're in that standstill photo or car accident where you could maybe get up and walk around. But when you're in the middle of a row at a Packer game, you're not gonna get mm-hmm. up and step
what
over
about
all those
the middle
people.
Of a 90-minute radio show?
Or the oh, middle of a 90-minute radio
well,
show.
We do have a break at noon.
We do have a break at noon.
But yeah. I think we all stand.
We do.
We do. Typically. We definitely do.
Yeah. So but it's sometimes there are situations where it's almost impossible to weave those things in. But having said that, if you can, you need to make a concerted effort to get up frequently. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite sayings is fill one tank and empty another. So if you drink a lot of water during the day, that's always very helpful because you have to get up and use the restroom. And then while you're up, you fill your water bottle and it kind of this constant cycle, which forces you to get up. Mm-hmm. But I think it's very mm-hmm. easy to go slide down that rabbit hole and sit for hours and watch television, whatever, and never get up.
Right. And you can do simple things like setting your watch mm-hmm. or your smartphone to buzz or beep or do something to mm-hmm. prompt you every 30 minutes to move.
My just watch tells that me habit. That.
There
I
you
get
go.
A little buzz.
A mm-hmm. little reminder.
Time to stand, it mm-hmm. says.
Yep, exactly. Yep.
At least for a minute.
Right.
Yeah, yeah exactly. You know, and standing compared to sitting, you know, if you're just standing, it's not tremendously different than sitting. It would be sit, stand. You need to mm-hmm. move. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, and if you think about it, when you get up to do one little thing, how many times do you do that thing and only that thing? Typically, when you get up, you're like, oh, I'm going to run this laundry upstairs. Oh, while I'm there, I'm going to do mm-hmm. this. And oh, while I'm there, I'm going to do this. And it kind of perpetuates. And I think it really keeps you moving even more mm-hmm. than if you glump it all together in one time.
Right, right. And I sometimes, when I have my list of things I need to do, I may jot it down next to my computer when I'm doing some computer work, and I will pick one thing. Mm-hmm. And I'll say, okay, I'm gonna read this student's paper, and then I'm going to get up, and I'm going to go do this thing. And then mm-hmm. I'm going to come back. I'm going to read the next paper. Then I'm going to get up. I'm going to do the next thing on my list. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I intentionally only do one thing at a time to force myself to get up more frequently. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the quality of the paper, if it's not that
oh, don't even get me
makes
started.
Makes you want to get up and oh. rage around the room.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
I do have a funny story about that. So one of my kids is a freshman in college, and they had to do a peer review of their of classmates' paper, and he sent me a message. He's like, he said, Mom, I don't know how you do it.
Lesson learned, right? Lesson
oh,
learned.
Man. Lori Tyne, Brody, Jill Tyne, Nissenbaum, our guests today. Questions for them? I hope you'll join in. The number's 800-642-1234. Or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Goldie in Oregon. Hi, what's on your mind, Goldie?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. In February of this year, I had Lapiplasty surgery, which is bunion surgery, on my left foot. It took an inordinate amount of time to heal. During that time, I was wearing a air cast, a boot on my left foot, on that foot, which
sure.
sort of threw off my right hip from compensating a little bit for that. I had therapy for probably 3 months, and now that has stopped. I still am having a lot of discomfort in that right hip, and I can't go to therapy any longer. And I'm wondering if there are exercises, continuing my physical and occupational therapy at home, but are there other exercises I can do for that hip that will help the discomfort? Especially after sitting, you were just mentioning sitting for long periods of time. I do get up frequently and move around, but there's still quite a bit of discomfort in that hip on the right side.
Okay.
So you can, this would be a new episode of CARE, correct, Lori?
Be.
Like a different
mm-hmm.
diagnosis. And so, Goldie, I hear you say that you're out of visits, but I'm guessing that was
for your foot.
So this would be a new condition and a new episode of CARE, with that you could see your therapist again.
Right.
Is that what you're thinking, Laurie?
Yeah, or were you in therapy for 3 months for your hip?
No, I was in therapy for 3 months for my foot.
Oh, yeah. This is a new episode of care. This is a brand new problem. So you should be able to start physical therapy with a new episode of care, a new plan of care for the problem at your hip.
A new diagnosis, everything.
Yeah,
so
does that make sense?
Yes, it makes sense. And it seems that the visits I had, even for my foot, they dealt with the hip a little bit toward the end.
Mm-hmm.
But the sessions were so abbreviated. And
Right. When you have two things going on like this, Goldie, and especially
right.
with and people think that, you know, a bunion surgery, oh, it's a little joint, little problem. That's
a huge
surgery
thing.
Because it impacts gait
right.
so much, which makes me think that right hip is probably
right.
due
and,
to that.
And so for those listeners who are getting put in a boot for anything, any problem,
correct.
Request an even up. It's called an even up because they put you in a boot and all of a sudden your legs are a different length and it wreaks havoc with everything sometimes on that side or on the opposite side. All you need is an even up that's going to even out your leg length and prevent this kind of a problem.
So right. now for Goldie, she should go back.
She should get a new referral, depending upon what her insurance is. She should initiate a new episode of care for her ongoing right hip pain.
Correct.
Go for it, Goldie. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
And you know, even though it's a short visit, you're going to get some help.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
and there'll be some prescribed things you can do.
Absolutely. And I'm thinking that when she was seeing her physical therapist for her bunion, I'm mm-hmm. sure the bunion was the main concern, and it wasn't, oh, by the way, here are a few exercises for your hip.
Right.
And so the hip probably didn't get the service it needed.
Yeah.
And so now is the time.
Right. And depending upon your insurance and so on, you know, treating a hip that wasn't on your diagnosis mm-hmm. lists, you know, sometimes insurance companies take issue with that.
Right.
And so you want to make sure that you're treating the body part that is on the referral, if you have a referral. Yeah.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Bevan in Madison will go to you. Hi, Bevan.
Good morning. So when I tuned in, I thought you were talking about Buddhist retreats where people spend, you know, sit for 14 hours a day. And I was talking about...
A Packer game, a Buddhist retreat, same thing.
Yeah, there were a lot of people worshiping in Green Bay
exactly,
yesterday.
Exactly, exactly. Also in their blaze
well,
orange.
It's funny because it's like, it's really almost the same thing, how to manage your sitting. You know, it's like the only difference is with a meditation, you're just sitting looking at a wall. But you have to get up every 40 or 50 minutes and do walking meditation. Then you go and you do eating meditation and then do work meditation. But it's the same thing. But it's all about mindfulness. So if people can sit so long, they should you know, sit doing nothing for a while. You know, so that just seems like that way they're not just filling their mind with another episode of Sopranos or whatever. Which I do.
Right. Bingo.
Yeah. There you go. Thank you very much for calling, Bevan. Appreciate it. You can join in too. Number to call 800-642-1234. Or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Talking physical therapy with our guests today, Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, Laurie Tyne-Brody. Trina Lasus is our engineer. Clara Neipert is our producer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Physical therapy on our minds today with our two guests, Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum and Laurie Tyne-Brody. Larry Mueller here. Amy from Milwaukee emailed us, and she's appreciating your ideas for moving around. But what do you suggest for a person who drives a truck for a living? What can be done while driving down the road? And if you're driving a semi, you can't stop every 30 or 45
right.
minutes.
Right. That is a unique situation, similar to airline pilots
mm-hmm.
who are kind of forced
yeah.
into this small area. So I think the best thing you can do is to do like some ankle pumps, some knee lifts, things like that to get your blood flowing a little bit. If you're comfortable having just one arm on the wheel, you could do some bicep curls and things like that with the opposite arm to get some circulation going. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can do some isometric contractions. Mm-hmm. So just, going back to the mindfulness, if you're aware of various muscle groups in your body, you can alternately tighten your stomach muscles, your quads, your hamstrings. You can press down with your left foot and work your ankles. You can do the same thing in the upper body, just doing isometrics to maintain strength and fire those muscles. Mm-hmm. Also keeps you awake.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, there are a few situations where it is very, very difficult to do this, and that's a perfect example of one that's very challenging.
Yeah.
I had a 5-hour drive yesterday, and that's kind of what I was doing the whole time.
Yeah. Shifting around.
Shifting around. Mm-hmm. Yep. Stretching.
Yep.
Thomas in Iron River, Michigan, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I recently had 36 visits with cardiac rehab because I had open heart surgery in May. After that, I still have balance problems. I'm 78 years old. And my heart surgery was a valve repair, not a revasc. But I find that I spend a lot of time on my butt or lying down just simply because of the lack of energy. I was walking 2 miles a day during the rehab period, but my ankle began to hurt so bad. It's an old injury, I suppose, and now I can't walk, and I really miss the walk, you know. But I have no, as soon as I do a mile or something, my foot just hurts so much.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I would say to start with, you should see a physical therapist for your ankle because it's limiting your lifestyle in many ways.
Right.
Your wellness for the continuation of your cardiac rehab, which is so important. And you need to get back to what you were doing. Chances are nothing changed drastically in your ankle over this time, so you should be able to get back to walking as you were, but you're going to need some guidance to do that. So I would absolutely get in to see a physical therapist and have them help you get your ankle in shape in order to increase your walking. In the meantime, I'd get in and walk in a pool because it's going to unweight your ankle. It's going to give you resistance to every part of your body that's underwater. It also actually increases the perfusion to your heart. So it helps with your circulation and with your heart. So I would get in the water and I would do that in the meantime. But I would see a physical therapist for my ankle to help get you back to what you love.
Yeah.
Especially since you mentioned some balance issues, that's also very concerning because we don't want you to fall. And so not only could your therapist give you some ankle strengthening strategies, can probably give you some really good balance exercises or incorporate balance exercises as well, because the last thing we want you to do, Thomas, is fall.
Yeah, good luck, Thomas. Thank you very much for calling. Annie in Bloomer, we'll go to you. Hi, Annie.
Hi, Larry. I guess my question is about, when we sit for so long and your posture, it's not always the greatest.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm dealing with that right now, too. I just got done having a baby. I'm a year postpartum, and I've realized after I've, gone through breastfeeding and everything that my posture isn't the greatest anymore, and I'm trying to think of ways to correct that and get it back to good posture, let alone sitting and just working every day.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so this is a great, great, great conversation to have because breastfeeding keeps the hormones circulating in your system that make you a little bit more loose or hypermobile. And they take, even when you're done breastfeeding, they stay in your system for a little bit of time. And so, Annie, you're not only dealing with a child that you're trying to breastfeed and get in weird positions to feed, and they're gaining weight and getting bigger, but you're dealing with some systemic laxity. So I would strongly encourage you to see a physical therapist for some very specific exercises to retrain some of your postural muscles to get you in a good position. They may make recommendations for how to sit, things like that, but I would definitely say this is the perfect person to see a physical therapist, Lori.
Absolutely. Just a visit or two is going to be really important, because what tends to happen over time is your new posture becomes your default posture, mm-hmm. and you're not aware. At some point, you won't be aware, as you are now, of how your posture has changed. And so this is what we see over people's lifetimes, is these subtle changes in how they move, how they stand, how they sit, that become the default way. And so to correct that takes a lot of work the longer it hangs around. So getting in now and correcting that posture will be key. And kudos to you for recognizing it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what's the difference between good posture and bad posture?
So, well, so Lori likes the word homeostasis, which is delightful. My good posture could be very different than Lori's good posture. It's the posture that requires the least amount of energy to kind of keep you in a good neutral position. So ideally, we liked our vertebrae stacked up really well. That would put our ligaments in a good length tension relationship. And that way we don't have to use our muscles as much to hold ourselves upright. So, but mine may be a little bit more in lumbar extension. Maybe Lori's is in slight flexion. So everybody has a little variance. So we used to say traditionally, we want you in a neutral spine. And we've kind of gotten away from that term because everybody's neutral or homeostasis is very different. So finding where Annie's body is in the best position for her spine and her ligaments and her muscles to kind of be resting quietly and not having to work so hard to hold her up might be different than other people. So it takes a little bit of education to figure out where that is for you.
Right. And I think a lot of that started at the foot. We used to always say that people's resting foot posture should be in subtalar joint neutral. Mm-hmm. And now we know that that's not true, that every patient has their own optimal mm-hmm. neutral position that may not be what we call subtalar joint neutral. So right. The same mm-hmm. is true. The big thing about posture relative to sitting is we tend to lean forward, our head tends to be forward, and our shoulders tend to be rounded to the front. So everything in front gets tight, everything in back gets weak. So we really want people to sit up and mm-hmm. lift up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a physical therapist, as you say, can look at Annie and observe and suggest.
Absolutely. So it may be looking at, if Annie works on a computer, it may be looking at their computer setup. Mm-hmm. So the challenge with laptops is, since it sounds like we're going to go down this hole, is laptops are great because they're portable, they're light, you can take them anywhere. The problem is if you're set up for your keyboard and your arms are in a good position, then your head is looking down because of the screen. If you're set up for the screen to put your neck in a neutral position, then your arms are at a disadvantage. So if people use a laptop, I encourage them to get those silicone keyboards that roll up, and mm-hmm. so you can get at a much better position. So there are some challenges with some of the electronic devices, but even setting up your workstation correctly at the appropriate height, whether you wear glasses or not, all those things are factors.
Annie, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Chuck in Green Bay next. Hi, Chuck.
Hi, I'm here.
What's on your mind?
Okay. I've had trochanteric bursitis. It's gone on about 2 months now with pain in the left hip. I've been seeing a physical therapist. I got injected with steroids, and it helped for a while. Then pain came back, and I've been getting physical therapy with stretching exercises for the piriformis and also the iliotibial band. Seems like I'm making minimal progress. I'm not really getting that much better. And I used to be very active, and now I really can't do things that I was able to do. So I had a couple of questions. One, after 2 months, would it be worthwhile to continue physical therapy? And number two, what exercises would you recommend that would not aggravate the condition?
So first of all, yes, it'd be important to continue. And number two, I'm wondering if we need to make sure there isn't a coming from your back a little bit. So you had an injection, it got a little bit better. So I'm wondering if there's an overlay of some sort of spine pathology.
Right.
Were you thinking that?
Yeah. So when you got injected, how much better did you get?
It seemed that it eliminated it for about 5 days, and then it slowly came back.
Okay, so probably some lidocaine right mm-hmm, away mm-hmm, numbed it, and mm-hmm. so it sounds like it was the source of the problem.
Okay,
trochanteric bursitis can be really difficult to get rid of. I've seen a lot of people with that. So you talked about doing stretching. What about strengthening?
I haven't been mostly stretching because when he tried to do exercises against resistance, I had a little bit of pain. He said, well, don't do that. You know,
you just push one of my big buttons.
Never one and done.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so the question is, you know, if you do something and you have a little bit of pain, the next question is why? Why do you have pain with that? And I need to look at how you're doing it. Is there something about how you're doing it, the amount of rotation your hip is in, the range of motion you're working through, your position against gravity? There are a whole number of factors with any exercise. So I look at that first and see if there's a modification I need to do in terms of how you're doing the exercise. And then I want to see if I can figure out a way for you to start that exercise at a lower dosage so we can start to get some traction, because strengthening at the end of the day is going to be the Clydesdale that gets you better. So I don't want to say, no, you shouldn't do strengthening. I want to figure out how to do strengthening to get you going. Jill's about to jump out of her seat. You go, girl.
I'm not going to jump out of my seat. That was just a signal when you're done off your, when you get off your pedestal, when you get off your done preaching, to throw it back. First of all, I wholeheartedly agree with the strengthening as well. That's important. And, you know, again, I'm shocked you didn't say this, Lori, but why only one side?
Oh, I know. Well, because I was so, because I just had this conversation with a patient this morning, you know, who was told, oh, well, that hurt, so don't do it. I'm like, no.
Right, exactly.
No, let's figure out how to do it, because it gives us information about what's going on.
Correct, correct. But the other thing I was going to mention for Chuck is just stretching in and of itself isn't going to be enough. Mm-mm. You have to think about your sleeping position. If you sleep on your side, make sure there's pillows between your knees, things like that. Don't sit with your legs crossed. I'd be very conscientious about the surface I was sitting on to make sure it wasn't curved like mm-hmm. a bucket seat, which could also impact things. So I think we not only need to be mindful about the stretching and now Lori threw in strengthening, which is so important, but other things during your activities of daily living that could be an aggravating factor.
Yeah. Right. And I don't want to lose Jill's point that she jumped on me about, which is why only one side?
Exactly.
Because I always remember the patient I had so many years ago who had trochanteric bursitis, and I was trying to figure out why one side and not the other. She worked at a chicken factory, and I never wanted to know exactly what she did, mm-hmm. but she leaned with one hip mm-hmm. up against a counter while she did what she did, and that's the side that bothered her. So there was no way therapy was going to get her better when she spent her entire day leaning
doing
that hip
opposite.
Up against a counter. So
right.
yes, figuring out why one side and not the other is also going to give you a clue as to what you need to do to get better.
Right.
Good luck, Chuck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. This this email is kind of relates. Carrie in Osseo emailed us. She's been weightlifting more and has noticed some others in the gym wearing a thick belt around their waist to protect their back while deadlifting or squatting. How much do those belts help, and how dangerous is lifting for the back?
Well, that's a great question. So first of all, as long as you're lifting a load that is appropriate and you're not lifting with poor mechanics, lifting is very safe for your back. So that's an important thing to take into consideration. We know in the younger high school population, kids get injured because of lack of supervision, which means they're throwing up too much weight, too load, too soon, too fast. And so as long as the weight is appropriate for you, you're doing a nice graduated program, weightlifting is a wonderful thing, especially for a female. We want to make sure that we keep those muscles strong, and it will help a little bit with bone mineral density. With regards to the belt.
Yeah, so I don't think the belt necessarily does anything structurally to support the. There is research on people who lift for a living, like mm-hmm. people yeah. who lift boxes, work in factories, and so on. For a while, there were a lot of places that required them to wear these belts. The research did not support them using these belts.
Pun intended.
Yeah, thank you, dear. Because, you know, if they didn't have the belt cinched up right or they weren't wearing it that day, they were actually weaker in their core because they didn't need to use their core to do the lifting. So I don't see many people using them anymore.
I don't either.
No.
So
there you go. We have Michael with an email. This has to do with osteoporosis. Michael wonders what causes osteoporosis and osteopenia. And is it malabsorption of calcium and changes in the functioning of osteoblasts and osteoclasts? Other
wow.
That's a question. I'm not. I wasn't sure you were.
No, it's right up. Yeah. So osteopenia by definition is bone mineral density that is up to 2.5 standard deviations mm-hmm. below your age match norms. Mm-hmm. And then if you get greater than 2.5 standard deviations below your age match norms, you're diagnosed as osteoporosis. Now, what causes it? There's a myriad of conditions mm-hmm. that can cause osteoporosis, including medications. Mm-hmm. Steroid medications is a big yep. one, so which includes inhalers. So mm-hmm. if you think about somebody who has asthma, that is a steroidal, that can be a factor as well. So my 50-some-year-old husband, who's been on a steroid for his asthma since the age of 5, is osteopenic at 50-something. And so you can't just always assume that, you know, mm-hmm. age in and of itself.
And gender
is a factor in osteopenia and osteoporosis. Part of the consideration we have with osteopenia and osteoporosis, and I'm just going to get on my soapbox now.
Oh, you go, girl.
Is you fill your bone bank mm-hmm. When you're younger. So there's a peak time in an adolescent's life where they will increase their bone mineral density the most. And for females, it is typically two sides on either side of the onset of menses or onset of your period. The average girl...
2 years, you mean?
2 years. I said 2 months. My bad. 2 years.
2 years.
On either side. And so the average girl gets their period around 12.2 years of age. So between 10 and 14 is really the sweet spot for bone mass accrual in females. And then if you think about how our activity level for kids is going down, mm-hmm. Dietary factors are going down, we have a whole population that isn't filling their bone bank as much as they should. So when they get older and they start to withdraw, they're withdrawing from a less full bank. Mm. How's that?
Yeah, that was very awesome. you rocked that.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately, yes. But it's never too late.
Correct.
Let's throw that in. So if you have been diagnosed with osteopenia or osteoporosis, you know, you should be working with the medical system, mm-hmm. discussing medications, but importantly, lifestyle. We've talked about that quite a bit on this show, where you need to have odd forces. Mm-hmm. Walking alone is insufficient because you're loading your bones the same way over and over. You need to load them differently in different ways. That's why dancing is great. Mm-hmm. And eating a healthy diet. If you're basically trying to slow the bone loss at that point.
Right. There's PTs that work in osteoporosis mm-hmm. clinics or bone clinics that would help. Exactly.
Yeah.
Jane in Duluth, Minnesota, we will give you a chance. Hi, Jane.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I love this program. It's so helpful and great programming. I'm calling on two things. I am trying to keep active and stay active because I know how important it is. I'm pushing 70, and I work seasonally at greenhouses, so I'm on my feet all day moving heavy, you know, somewhat heavy stuff, but not bad. And I do seasonal work in retail this time of year, opening boxes and stocking shelves and things. And I really am sore. I'm so sore at the end of the day, but I just get up and, you know, do it every other day. And my problem is we have a wonderful senior center here that provides free access to water therapy. Mm-hmm. And I have a real problem with chlorine because of some of my medical issues. And I just wonder, is there any way to get around that, because it would help me. The water therapy would help me so much more than I'm already getting my exercise.
Yeah, you need a salt water.
Yeah, you need a salt water pool. So all pools are required to have some chlorine. So you can't get away and have zero chlorine unless you go in a lake, I guess. But even saltwater pools have to have some chlorine. In Science Drive, we have O2 is our primary disinfectant, but we also obviously have some chlorine. So I don't know what your pool uses for disinfectant or what their levels of chlorine are. You know, they certainly vary from one pool to the next depending upon their clientele, i.e. a lot of kids, more chlorine.
Right. Is it a skin reaction with the chlorine, Jane?
No, it's I have a prosthetic eye, so I've got to take care of my only good eye.
Oh.
And it irritates my eye. And somebody said, well, wear goggles.
Yeah,
I don't know that.
What about goggles?
Well, I don't know. Would that help?
Oh, sure.
I've never.
It'd be worth a try.
It'll be worth. So you could either do swim goggles, or you could do like a mask for a mask and snorkel. You know, mm-hmm.
Right? And the other thing is, Jane, you could do so much without you would not have to put your head underwater at all.
Yeah, you don't. You're not talking about immersing your face, are you?
No. I'm just talking about
just being in the water with your head out. Yeah,
and walking. Yeah, walking in it.
Yeah. I would a good pair of goggles, not cheap goggles, but if you go to a swimming store, mm-hmm. and like I like Barracudas, you might like Barracudas. They have a soft foam that molds to your eye, unlike some of the harder plasticky goggles. You might find those more comfortable. And try different things. The pool would be a great place for you. And I'm thinking we could figure out the eye thing. Otherwise, ask your eye doctor for a recommendation.
Yeah. I. What about through the nose? If you wear goggles, inhaling, would that? I don't know. Would it have an effect?
That's a really good question. So yeah. So the snorkel mask. Oh yeah. I don't know.
So yeah. I don't know.
You'd have to try a few different things.
You have to try some different things and maybe talk to your ophthalmologist and see if they have a suggestion.
Because there's got to be people who similarly, you have to protect that eye.
Right.
That's a really good question.
Yeah, that's a new one, and that's a great one. So let us know what they say, Jane. Yeah.
Call back after you've been
doing some stuff. And I bet you won't be as sore, but let us know how that all worked out.
And thanks so much for calling. Yeah. Appreciate your call. Brad in Minnesota, we go to you. Hi, Brad.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call. Appreciate the show. It's awesome. I just have a question about my knee. And this is actually a while ago, back in May. About 6 months ago, I stepped on a rut in my lawn wrong, and my ankle kind of went sideways, and my ankle's fine, but there was kind of a weird like hair popping on my left knee on the inside, like the inside knee left, maybe left towards the front, and it feels kind of like it was stretched or popped or something, and ever since then it's I have like maybe like 5 good days, and then there's one day like a week where it'll just be a lot of pain, and it's very very centralized, and wondering what that could be, and also it's fine when I stand or walk on it, but it's sleeping, it's kind of painful. So that's kind of what I got going on.
Okay.
So we both wonder if it's your medial collateral ligament. There's a ligament that runs on the inside of your knee, and depending on how your knee went when you fell into this hole, if your knee kind of went inward, you could have sprained your MCL, and without good rehab, it would make sense that this knee is acting up every once in a while. And sleeping might be a factor, especially if you're sleeping on your side, and all those things might be loading it differently.
So when you stepped in the rut, which way did your knee go?
So it would have been, if I'm standing, it'd be my left foot. So my left, I guess, the foot went towards the outside of my foot went in.
Yeah, that's
outside of the foot went in, and the inside of my foot went up, and then it just felt like a weird, not a popping, but like a really hard stretch. And it's very isolated.
Yep.
So if I could, it's like an inch and a half, like cord or thread.
Yeah, there you go. That's the MCL. That's your MCL.
You nailed it.
Good job.
So that's a valgus stress, and that is probably a sprain of your medial collateral ligament. There's a couple different bands of that. It's totally appropriate that walking would be fine because you don't load your MCL that much. It's loaded most in full extension. So if you're sleeping, for example, with your knee fully straight, it's probably not going to like that. Or if you're sleeping on your side and you're torquing on it, you're not going to like it. MCLs are notorious for taking a long time to get better.
Right.
They're a sneaky one. So I would go in to see a physical therapist and probably just need a few things to strengthen that area of your knee and the muscles that support that area of your knee and help you get over this.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes just the smallest amount of compression, like a little tiny compression garment, maybe to sleep at night, things like that might be helpful too.
Yeah, good idea.
Makes sense. Brad, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Lori Tyne Brody, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests as we talk physical therapy. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network as we look at your physical therapy with our guest Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW, and Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Questions, give a call at 800-642-1234 or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Ken in Madison has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Ken.
Hi there. Thank you for picking my call. I am 73 years old, and I use ski poles for walking. And I'm recently, primarily on trails, and recently I've had a string of ankle sprains. And I'm wondering if your guests have any suggestions for rehabbing that or preventing it in the future.
Yep, I would see a physical therapist. Mm-hmm. So it kind of depends on how you're spraining your ankle, Ken. It sounds like you're on trails, you're on uneven terrain, so that could be a factor. So you might need a little bit of a balance and proprioception program that trains your ankles how to respond to uneven things. It would be very helpful to see what shoes you're wearing, to see if your shoes are a factor. And then, of course, there's always the almighty, why are you getting it on one side and not the other? Mm-hmm. Maybe he's getting them on both. But mm-hmm. It sounds like you want to be very active.
Right. Right, and you don't want to end up in that category that we classify as chronic ankle instability,
right,
because that's really difficult to rehab. So when you have your first or maybe your second ankle sprain, it's really important to go in so that we can figure out why you're continuing to do this. So did your first sprain result in enough ligament laxity where you're now unstable, mm-hmm, and we have to figure out how to deal with that? Or is it something in how you move? Is it a structural problem? Is it a dynamic problem? Is it a strength issue? Is it because you're lacking mobility someplace else and it's creating a torque that that pushes you towards a sprain? There's a whole list of variables here. So I think seeing a physical therapist for a couple of visits to assess you, to look at how you walk, how you move, look at your ankle, and give you some things that you can be doing at home to prevent this would be key. You really want to stay active, especially as we head into winter.
Right. Yeah. And I would be curious if time of walk is a factor, if fatigue is a factor, mm-hmm, like muscular fatigue up at the hip, if he starts crossing midline, you may want to mm-hmm consider bringing your ski poles and the shoes that you wear to your therapy mm-hmm visits so the therapist can look at those as well.
Good luck, Ken. Thank you for calling. Linda in Appleton. Hi, what's on your mind?
Hey, I've been playing with plantar fasciitis, you know, for about a year now, and I've worked with a podiatrist, you know, with a couple of cortisone shots, and also with a chiropractor who seems to have helped a lot with the arch area and the outer front of the foot, you know, with the Graston technique. But the heel is still a bane for mm-hmm me and hurts when you walk. And I've tried over the counter, you know, the Superfeet mm-hmm orthotics that you put in your foot. And I'm wondering, some of them kind of help, but it's still not where I would really like it to be to go out and, you know, actually take walks. So is a custom orthotic from a podiatrist going to have to be my route?
Let me just bring in another question that relates to this. Greg's wondering whether ankle wraps with Velcro or shoe inserts are better for treating plantar fasciitis.
Mm, neither.
So, right. Mm-hmm. So there's been a lot of research, Linda, that's shown that off-the-shelf orthotics are no better than a custom orthosis unless you have a very specific foot condition that you don't have probably with plantar fasciitis. So what's more important is to make sure that you're on a very good stretching program, mobility program, that someone has looked farther up the chain to see if you have weakness in your hips, things like that. So I would avoid the passive device and go with probably seeing a physical therapist if you have not, and see if there's other things up the chain that are causing this, because I guess for the third time today, I'm going to say, why one side and not the other?
Right, right.
So that's a big factor.
That is a big factor. Why are you having trouble on one side and not the other? Is there something asymmetric in how you move? Is there a structural asymmetry, like a leg length difference? And also, people tend to do calf stretching, but they don't do plantar fascia stretching, which is very different from calf stretching. And the other part of it is, have you tried a night splint?
Right.
We lost
Linda. Oh, we lost her? Okay. Oh. So, well, let me just say, in the last clinical practice guideline for plantar fasciitis, one of the more highly recommended interventions was a night splint. Night splint, 2 to 3 months mm-hmm. before you see results, mm-hmm. typically, but very worth it. And mm-hmm. if you were to get a night splint, I strongly recommend a night splint that goes on top of your foot, not one that goes behind your ankle and under your arch, because it aggravates your plantar fascia mm-hmm. when mm-hmm. you do that. So mm-hmm. there's one called a Darco, D-A-R-C-O, that goes on top of your foot that's much more comfortable for night wear. So, yeah, I would say getting on the appropriate stretching. I just saw somebody the other day who has chronic Achilles tendonitis. And it turns out that the plantar fascia and the great toe are so stiff that I think he's loading his Achilles tendon.
Too much.
Because there's not enough mobility elsewhere. Thus, the importance of looking both sides of the kinetic chain.
Yep.
And so, then back to Greg for a minute.
Oh, the ankle,
ankle
yeah.
wraps with Velcro Mm-mm. or shoe inserts?
No. I would go, if I was going to do some sort of a supporter device, I'd go with a night splint.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Marita in Montana.
Wow.
Hi. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. My question for the therapist is, how many times can you do an ablation on the nerve coming out of L4, L5?
Well, typically they only do it once.
Right, and then it's ablated.
Then it's ablated. So if your symptoms come back, well, so let's back up. So if you have an ablation and it relieves your symptoms, then that was likely the source of your problem. You would think that those same symptoms wouldn't return. Is that the case for you?
It's beginning to return. It was done a year ago. However, I'm also going to a massage therapist that does myofascial release,
mm-hmm.
and I am getting a tremendous amount of relief from that, almost to the point where I just don't think I want anything else done to that nerve.
I would agree. Great. And it could be that post-op, you've developed a little bit of scar mm-hmm. around where they did that ablation, and that is perpetuating some of those same symptoms because of that scar in the area, and the myofascial mm-hmm. release would be the perfect thing to deal with that. So
right, exactly.
I would absolutely support you in staying with that,
absolutely.
That treatment.
Yep.
Yeah.
Thanks, Marita. Appreciate the call. Tom in Nelson, Wisconsin, have you got kind of a quick question?
Yeah. I suffered through 4 muscle tears in my calf muscle this summer. And I have no idea why that started. I've never had that before in my life. And it happened on each side 2 times. Wasn't doing any great exercising, just kind of walking slowly, and suddenly it was like, boom.
So are you talking about a muscle strain where you pull the muscle?
No, it was my physical therapist said, no, this is, you tore the muscle.
What muscles are they? What are they?
It's the one that you feel in your calf when you bend down on you try to bend your knee.
Your soleus?
It's not when you stretch it. I don't know the name of it.
Gastroc? Plantaris?
Well, yeah. So when you bend your knee, that'd be a soleus. Gastroc is knee straight.
Outside, lower outside?
Oh, lower outside? Is it a perineal?
I don't know.
Okay, so do you have a history of like prolonged steroid use?
No, none whatsoever.
Okay. You weren't on any weird antibiotics?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, so why that would happen, I don't know. Have you asked the physical therapist that you're seeing?
Well, I didn't actually go to the physical therapist. She was there down in the exercise room where I work out.
Oh, curbside consult.
And she took a look at it and said, No, you tore that sucker.
Okay, so you had a curbside consult. Okay. Is it limiting you?
Well, it's not happening right now, but I'm just not sure what to do.
See a physical therapist. You need to there's enough funk here that you need to have someone put eyes on this, not just somebody in the gym.
Yeah.
Have somebody put eyes on this and take a look at you and figure this out. And cuz you want to keep exercising.
Yeah, formal evaluation.
Yeah, exactly.
Makes good sense. Tom, good luck and thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum is a professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison, and Lori Tyne-Brody is a physical therapist and an athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic, and they will be with us right up until 12:30 today. You can join in. You can email us, the email address ideas@wpr.org, or phone us at 800-642-1234. We'll take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with Jill and Lori. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Talking with our regular physical therapist on the show today, Larry Mueller, here with Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison, and Lori Tyne-Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Covering a lot of areas today, and certainly as I look at my computer screens, I see that where our phone lines are full and there's a lot of emails. So let's go to the phones first. Tanya in Stevens Point, thank you for calling.
Well, hi. Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So I also, I sat down for a while after my parents passed away and sat on my couch and cried, right? And all of a sudden, I wasn't walking very well, and then my feet started hurting, and the pain got so bad, I could barely walk. And, it kind of presented as the plantar fasciitis, disease in the feet, and I found some exercises for sciatica nerve. And it finally, those exercises, of course, I didn't go to physical therapist. I'm sorry, I just didn't have insurance for that. But, it really wasn't the plantar fasciitis. It must have been up in my hip and my back. And just a lot of it and just continuing through it. It took a long time for that to heal. But now I walk better than I did, even before the injury. And it presented in the beginning. It was just like almost like I stepped on a pebble or something. It just got worse and worse and worse. And it was in my heel, my right heel. And then it spread to both feet. It was very painful, I gotta say.
But it's over now.
Yeah, well,
it is. I mean, I still have to, stretch. Every day I stretch before I get out of bed, and in the shower, I lay down in my shower and stretch. I know that sounds weird, but and I found a supplement called alpha lipoic acid that reduces the swelling, and that really seemed to take it, take me to the next level so that I could continue. And I feel way better now. So don't sit down. I agree with you.
Don't sit down. There you go. Well, you've also made the point so nicely for us and things that Jill has harped on repeatedly in this show that you can't just look at the joint of primary complaint. You have to look at the entire kinetic chain because it's that classic, the shin bone's connected to the knee bone. It is all connected in a kinetic chain. So just because the pain is presenting in one body part doesn't mean it's originating there. You have to look farther. So
good for you.
Right. Tanya. And the other thing is you've heard her say that she's very diligent about continuing with her exercises. She feels better. She said that. She goes, I feel the best I have, yet she didn't discontinue her exercises.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's a key point. So good for you, Tanya. Keep working hard.
Yeah, thanks for that call.
Yeah, thanks very much, Tanya. Appreciate it. Rich in Two Rivers, your turn. Hi, Rich.
Yeah, hi. My question is, there's been a recent increase in Achilles tendon tears, And I won't name the doctor that I worked with, but he said he was from the Dream Team and from the Minnesota Vikings. And he said that he did a biopsy of every Achilles tendon tear, and there was something structurally wrong with the tissue. And so now we have Rodgers and Cousins that just had two tears. And what is your opinion on whether that just tore because of the, it didn't look like it tore because of a reason, or because of input of whatever they had to deal with, you know, in the career?
Yeah, sure.
So it's likely what we would call a tendinopathy, not a tendinitis. Mm-hmm. And we've seen this at the elbow, where there was a term, hyperplastic fibro. Oh, no, I'm just going to slaughter that term. It'll come to me later. It was just in my head, and it just disappeared. So a lot of times it's degeneration. So when you go in, there is no inflammation, but there is degeneration of the tendon, and that's what they see. So if they go in and they don't see normal tendon tissue, it is because they're seeing sort of this degenerative soup that is not inflammation.
Correct. And, you know, you mentioned Aaron Rodgers, which of course everybody talks about. You know, so there's age-related tendon or age-related changes within this tendon. And so just the right motion can cause a rupture. So I don't know that I don't feel like we're seeing, at least at the collegiate level, a huge increase in Achilles tendon ruptures. I feel like we are seeing a lot more a chronic Achilles tendinopathy, as Lori alluded to. And so I don't know that. I don't know how to answer
so
that.
So it was, you know, the thing is, as it ages, as the tendon ages, the fibers, the number of fibers that are actively able to be utilized to decelerate, to sustain a load, especially during a strong negative or eccentric contraction, it decreases because some of those tendons, just like your joints, are suffering from degeneration. So they cannot sustain the same load. So the remaining fibers have to carry extra load, and they're not up to the task either. So it's a fairly classic, it's called the Hayflick limit, at the cellular level, where they're no longer able to sustain that same level of load.
Rich, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Kate and Racine called, couldn't stay with us. She says that counter-strain physical therapy is new. Counter-strain physical therapy, and wonders what you think of it.
Oh, it's not new.
Oh, it's not new.
It's very old.
Let me tell you, I won't tell you
How
old it is, but I did it as a new graduate when I was working in Miami, Florida.
Strain, counter strain.
The book is, probably 40 years old.
Right, I was going to say in the 80s. So
In the 80s. So it's not new. Is it effective? Yes, it can be very effective. So
I think A, there's not a lot of people trained in it. B, there's not a lot of research on it, so a lot of people kind of scoot away from it. So, but it can be effective regardless of whether there's good evidence to show it.
And it's, I think, a newer version of what we used strain counter strain for is dry needling.
Correct.
So we used it for those little trigger points in muscles, and for those who want to know what it is, basically you find that little trigger point in the muscle, you shorten the muscle, and you put lots of solid, painful pressure on it for 90 seconds.
Hold it.
And then you do that repeatedly until that little knot gives way. Today, we would have Jill stick a little needle in it,
and it would take
care of it in about 10 seconds.
That's right.
So.
There we go. Let's go to Karen in Eau Claire. Hi, Karen.
Hi, this is Karen. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Go ahead.
So I have something strange happening. Anyway, I have a lot of joint, tendon, muscular issues, and I have two reverse replacement shoulders. And the right one was done about 9 years ago. And recently I hurt it, and it wasn't anything I was doing, just lifting something, and it turned out to be a stress fracture. At least that's what the doctor thinks it is. But after I had the stress fracture for maybe a while, I started to have this horrific pain that goes from like underneath my armpit down my elbow and through my shoulder blade back around. And when I'm talking, I am talking 8 out of 10 pain. Like, I cannot. I had to go and get a shot of Toradol. I'm taking narcotics like crazy. I'm in so much pain. So they did a CT scan on last Friday, but we don't have the results of that. But it feels like what I always know as tendonitis.
Mm.
The doctor's a little concerned that I'm actually, maybe my hardware is not structurally good anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you had a reverse total shoulder 9 years ago, and then you said you had a fracture, the stress fracture. Was that in your humerus, like up in the, by your, up,
kind your of upper arm bone?
Yeah, right.
Acromion.
Oh, did not see that coming.
Oh, I didn't see that coming either. But you said you have a lot of joint problems, other joint problems?
Yeah, I have a fake knee. I've had to have my feet completely redone because they're just screwed up, deformed high arch, like such a high arch. I was the highest arch my doctor had ever seen in his practice of like 25 years.
Mm-hmm. Aquinas deformity.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if her hardware is loosening, and I'm wondering if it's irritating her ulnar nerve.
Oh,
so she's got some, because nerve pain, it doesn't sound tendony to me at all.
Eight out of ten, that's not tendon.
So I'm wondering if she's got some hardware loosening and it's hitting her lower brachial plexus, and that would be ulnar nerve, which would run on the inside of her arm down to her elbow.
Part of me wondered if she's unstable.
Well, yeah, well, that would allude to she could be unstable because her hardware's loosening, or maybe she's just unstable.
Maybe she's just unstable and all these joints have been done because she's hypermobile. So I think you need to get the results of that CT scan and follow that thread up. It sounds like your doctor is on top of this.
Yep.
So I would continue to follow that and see where it leads. But yeah, it sounds more nerve related to us than, and it could be from your hardware, could be some instability. Any of those things are possibilities. So it's really hard to make a call without any more information from that. But let us know,
right?
Because, you know, we love a zebra.
Correct.
And we learn from all these. So.
Correct. Yeah. I've never heard of a stress fracture and acromion. I don't think I've ever heard of that.
Ever in my life. Nope. That's a new one. So we need some follow-up on this, Karen.
So pretty much exactly a month from now, call us back.
Oh, exactly. You'll know. We'll have more information.
Thanks, Karen. Joe in Campbellsport, on to you now. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I got a question for the doctors. I blew my back out, or what I call blowing my back out, 4 weeks ago now, so essentially a month. I've been going to a chiropractor, and he's gotten me that I can at least stand and tolerate some things. But I do my stretches. It relieves my back for, you know, a little bit, and then it goes right back if I'm standing or walking. My question is, do you think I should go see a regular physician?
So let's back up the van. So how did you injure this, and what are your symptoms?
Well, I'm an ex-farmer truck driver, but I store equipment in my shed, and I put my pontoon boat up on these roller skates, and I pushed it against the wall.
No, you didn't.
Get it out of the way.
You put your pontoon on roller skis and pushed it against the wall. Joe, can I ask how old you are?
I'm 58.
Okay. So was it in the act of pushing that you hurt your back?
I don't know. The next morning I woke up, I couldn't move. And if I did move, it put me in tears.
Got it. All right. And your pain now is where? In your back? Does it stay in your back?
In my lower back, yeah.
Okay.
All my waist area.
Okay. All right. So, yes, see somebody. We need to rule out that, you know, you could have a spondy. You could have had a small fracture in your back if you're having that kind of pain. And you should see a physical therapist. It's been 4 weeks. So if this was going to get better on its own or with some gentle chiropractic treatment, you would be better. So we need to find out what's going on. So the good news is there's not symptoms going into your legs.
Right.
Are you sleeping okay?
Well, yeah, no, I toss and turn, but I try to get comfortable.
Okay. Yeah. No, you need to see somebody else. You can start with your physician, but you should certainly see a physical therapist and get on an appropriate strengthening program for your back to help recover from this.
And stop pushing pontoon boats by yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So,
landing once, and for that, I was having trouble getting his boat out of the water, mm-hmm. and for that, I spent about a year.
Oh,
in some pain.
Right. You got to be careful.
Well, Bill in Wausau is looking for some exercises he can do to get him to get the ability to get off the floor smoothly. In his 80s, wants to keep his mobility up.
Good for him. Lori knows Lori's got it.
Oh, yeah. So we did a study on getting down and up from the floor and the ability to go from standing down to the floor and back up to standing was predictive of morbidity and mortality. So it's a really important skill. And sometimes I see people who say, can you get down and up from the floor? Oh, I don't do that anymore. I'm like, yes, you should. And, you know, so if you're in your house, you can crawl to something and get up. But if you're outside, mm-hmm. you're in your backyard, you walk out your back door to let your dog out in the winter and you go down and you can't get back up, that's a big issue. So there are strategies on how to do this. And, you know, I could try to describe it to you over the phone, but you probably won't get it. But you basically go down into what we call half kneeling, or for those of us who went to Catholic school, a genuflect.
Or will you marry me?
Yeah, or will you marry me? Yep. And then you go down to tall kneeling, which is kneeling on both knees. And then you kind of side sit down onto the floor. And then to get up, you reverse that. You go from side sitting up onto both of your knees, up into will you marry me? And then I would put both hands on that knee that's bent and use it to push myself up. Mm-hmm. And if you have questions, I'm sure YouTube has many videos on how to do this.
Exactly. What would be the name of it? Just getting up?
Getting down and up from the floor.
Safely or something like that. Without a chair or something like that.
I'm sure I haven't looked, but I'm sure there are videos. We did one, but I don't know that I could find it anymore.
Right.
I wanted to talk, and we did mention education and training for PT.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to address that?
Sure. Well, currently the entry-level education for physical therapists is we're doctorally trained, so we have a doctoral degree. And part of the reason that we went to a doctoral level is because of our expanding scope of knowledge and so many more things we had to know and understand. And part of that is due to the fact that in every state in the United States, I'm pretty sure it's every state, there is some form or another of direct access where patients can go directly to see a physical therapist without mm-hmm. seeing a physician first, regardless of insurance, you can do that. And so because of that, our scope of knowledge needed to expand a little bit. So we are doctorally trained. So every student in a DPT program has already gone through an undergraduate degree. And their degree is usually in something related to biology or chemistry or kinesiology or movement science. But we've had students come through our program with real estate as their undergraduate degree or engineering or something like that. And this might be a second career for them. And then the academic programs are anywhere from 2 to 3 years in length, depending on the program. And there's a minimum requirement of clinical education that a physical therapy education program has to put in place. I don't know the number off the top of my head. Our students do 42 weeks of clinical placement, so almost a year of clinical practice.
They're working with somebody else. Mm-hmm.
Correct. Right. Yeah. With a licensed physical therapist who's privy to our program, understands it, and it's a one-on-one situation. So as a patient, you may go see a physical therapist who has a student or an intern with them, and that would be somebody who's training to get their license to become a licensed PT.
And not unlike medical school, physical therapists can also do a residency mm-hmm. and a fellowship to get specialty training in specialty areas. So, for example, Jill and I are both board certified in sports physical therapy. So you can do a residency in sports. You can do a residency in orthopedics and pediatrics and neurology, and then go on and do a fellowship in a subspecialty there. So,
and what are the, where would you go to work and what are salary levels? I'm sure it varies considerably.
Yes, it does. Well, interestingly, we've seen a big paradigm shift in where jobs are. When I graduated from PT school 30 years ago, that's when patients who had spinal cord injuries or if you had a stroke or something like that, you spent 6 weeks in the hospital in acute care. You know, you were in the hospital for days. So the hospital systems, inpatients, seeing patients in the hospital was a pretty big part of where we went to practice. That has changed dramatically as healthcare has changed. So at least 70% of what we work with as physical therapists is musculoskeletal in nature. So it's these orthopedic conditions that we're talking about, whether it's inpatient or outpatient. Other places that physical therapists work are school districts, nursing homes, rehabilitation centers.
Industry. Where they're working with workers to ensure safety in terms of their mechanics and so on. And they can actually work, have a clinic in there where if someone is hurt at work, they can see a physical therapist there. We have physical therapists here in the emergency department who see people who come in, you know, with an acute back injury. You know, they getting seen right away and get set up on the right things to do from day one instead of waiting 2 weeks to get in to see somebody makes good sense.
Right, exactly. And so, and it doesn't matter what your degree is, you still have to be licensed in the state in which you practice. So Lori's physical therapy degree is a bachelor's.
Right. Yes. I forgot for a minute.
Because it was so long ago.
Thank you.
Mine is a master's. But we still meet all the criteria to be licensed in this state. So your degree and license are two separate things, I think, is a way to think about it. But as time goes on, you will see less and less people who have bachelor degrees, certificates. There are still some people out there who have certificates or master's level. Eventually, everyone will be a doctorally, trained, a DPT.
Yeah, but in terms of that scope of practice, you know, for example, those physical therapists working in the emergency department, you know, they're not seeing somebody on referral from a physician.
Correct.
In the state of Wisconsin, physical therapists can order radiographs.
Correct.
So knowing when it's appropriate to order one and which views to order for this specific condition is just an example of the expanding knowledge that we need.
Correct. And when you go from one state to another to practice, you have to get licensed in that state. So if there are requirements or if there's the scope of practice is different, then you need to make sure that you're trained to match the scope of practice to the state in which you're moving to.
And salary range?
Oh my gosh. Starting salary, I have no idea. I'd probably say between 70 and 80.
Okay.
That'd be my guess in the state of Wisconsin. Yeah.
Full-time.
Somewhere in there. Yeah. And very much in demand in rural care.
Rural care, definitely.
Rural care is a big place where we're definitely in need of physical therapists.
Right.
So you're probably, by the time you're done, you probably spent how many years?
Let's
say the real estate person who got a real estate degree, but now they're going to, another 4 years?
So the real estate person would have had to go back and take prerequisite classes, but could do that while they're working full time. So typically it's a undergraduate degree and then it's probably 3 years of PT school. So seven-ish all told.
Yeah. So even for me, my first degree was not in physical therapy. My first degree was in a smattering of many other things. And then I went part-time and then I did 2 years of PT school.
Thank you both.
Sure. Thanks, Larry.
Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, Lori Tyne-Brody will be back in about a month and we will do this all over again. And thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store. On the Ideas Network, I'm Larry Mueller.